Hello.
Hi. Welcome back.
It's been a while.
Yes. Yes, it has. How's everyone's coronavirus quarantining going?
Is that you, Rona?
My favorite meme so far is this chihuahua that on the top it says, every time I get a little tickle in my throat, and then he's got this funny face and it's like, is that you, Rona? So now we like to call it Rona instead of Corona. Probably my favorite.
We are not going to talk about that today.
No.
I mean, except for that, just what we just did.
Is that you dependent?
Codependent? Yeah, you can't really shorten it the same way. Mm-hmm. Totally different meaning.
Yep.
We talk about codependency.
And why are we going to talk about codependency?
Because I am codependent.
Woo!
Recovering. Yeah. Talk about what that means, how I found out I was codependent. And we talk about what boundaries are and how I could have healthier relationships. And it's all within the context of my marriage and divorce. So you get to find out a lot about me.
Yay. Joni. We've actually wanted to talk about this for a long time, but we just didn't know how to talk about it. And so we brought on our friend Jessica, who we had on here a couple times ago.
From Thoughts on Thoughts podcast.
Yeah.
Shout out.
So she's now our friend.
Best.
Friend.
Best friend.
And so Joni was like, I want more of like a professional's
perspective.
Perspective on what this is. And so that was really helpful because I knew Joni while going through the divorce, but then Jessica has the personal, professional outlook on what this is and maybe how to process it. So it's really cool because we get a little personal with Joni and it makes her a little uncomfortable to put it out there, but she also has had this passion and really wants people to learn from it and realize what codependency is so that if you yourself are codependent or are dealing with someone that is codependent, then you can understand what it is and then be able to learn and grow and change if you feel the need to.
Yeah. So enjoy.
Yes. While you're doing nothing.
But yeah, seriously.
Like, maybe just like all the projects around the house, cleaning. Has anyone else done a crap load of cleaning?
The last two times we've done intros, we've talked about that you should listen to this while you are cleaning.
Oh, so maybe.
No, we can leave it. I just think it's funny. Must be when we both listen to podcasts. I found out while I was listening to this podcast that I am actually terrible at pronouncing things. I sometimes just halfway do the word. Anyways, all right.
I also find out how much I freaking laugh.
It's not a bad thing.
Reason. Yeah,
it's a good quality.
Have to cut out a bunch of my laughs.
You make everyone feel so funny. Thank you. See?
Yeah.
All right.
This is a brave space.
We are going to talk about codependency. So, Jessica, do you mind explaining what codependency is?
I do not mind. I will happily do it.
Oh, That was the hardest question of the night.
Relax, guys. Codependency is when your emotional state is tethered to someone else's emotional state. So your needs are tethered to what someone else can give you in a clinically unhealthy way. So an example would be your mother getting you the right present on Christmas fulfills all your needs and then you can be satisfied. Whereas if she did not guess it correctly, you'd be very upset and unable to control your emotional state. Conversely, codependence can go both ways. So the other way would be you are codependent with other people and you feel the pressure to get them the exact right gift and to see them be happy in order for you to feel happy. It can go either way. Either you are trying to make someone in your life perfectly happy or you're depending on other people to make you perfectly happy. And it definitely true codependence will mix and mingle with those where you're just always dependent on other people for how you're feeling and it gets exhausting.
Mm-hmm. When it almost seems like it's a little tricky, it seems like it would be easy to become codependent. Maybe I just I think I am slightly codependent.
I think
sometimes
we all are
a spectrum, so everyone right. is. But codependence as like a mental disorder would be the clinical. In the DSM, you have to have it interfere with your work, school, home, and friends, like social life. Everyone else is on a spectrum of healthy dependence on other people and then unhealthy codependence.
Yeah. Because we're all emotional. And so it's so easy to affect each other with emotions. But I guess like what you're saying is if you're dealing with it in a healthy way and setting boundaries, then that's a lot easier.
Well, codependents suck at boundaries and don't even know what
they
look like. That was certainly me. I always say I don't know where I end and someone else begins, which is kind of what you're saying.
Yes, that is a great way to describe it.
I think that their life is so wrapped up in my life. Like their successes are my successes, their failures are my failures, and I kind of get lost in that person's life. And I'm validated by that other person instead of being like when they're doing well, but when they're not doing well, I'm not doing great.
And so you realized that you were codependent when you were married?
Yes. Yeah, I had been codependent, I think, before that with my mother. Just when my family was struggling a lot growing up, I got unhealthily attached to how my mom was doing. And I think that just carried forward into all my romantic relationships, which I definitely see that pattern now. Like, I would, even as I was dating my ex-husband, not my ex, I was dating him prior to being married to him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think I said at some point, like, every relationship I have, I feel like I am, like, essentially fixing that person. Like, that felt like my role was to make them better at whatever they're struggling with in life, whether that was, like, school or spiritually, emotionally. And I felt better about myself when they were doing better. And I felt like my job was done. And that was my role as like a girlfriend or fiance or wife. And no one wanted that. No one asked me for that. But that's like how I knew how to like love someone was to kind of take care of them.
So do you think that stemmed from like the relationship with your mom?
I don't know. That's what I think, where I felt like I needed to take care of my mom all the time.
Well, because wouldn't she come and, like, ask you for advice or...
Yeah. And when my parents' marriage was rocky, I knew a lot more about it than was probably appropriate. Definitely was more than it was appropriate. I don't know. I think that might be why. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have any... everything I've read is, like, usually there's some type of trauma that happens as a child that kind of teaches you, like, that's how you, like, love people is by being codependent with them. And that's the one that I can kind of point to. And say, like, from, like, 14 on, I was, like, a confidant in my mom's marriage. And I felt like it was my role to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be the root. Yes. It would be having that feeling of, if I can X, Y, and Z, then I can fix this and they can be happy. And then I can be happy after that. But I'm not going to be happy until my mom is feeling happy. Yeah. And in that way, that is... taking responsibility for your mom's feelings rather than just trying to be nice to your mother.
Yeah. And it was confusing as a teenager to kind of be asked to do that. I don't think she was purposely asking me to do that. I think she just wanted someone to vent to. And because of just the situation, there weren't a lot of people she could be open with. And there's definitely people who would have been more appropriate to be open with. But I was an easy one. And I got it because I lived at home. So... I don't fault my mom for it. I think she was just doing the best she could, but it definitely changed my view of how to like love people.
Yeah, we're all going to impact each other. And so
yeah, and parents more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Because that's your primary attachment figure. And so if she's teaching you and allowing you to take on some of her emotional stuff, which was probably easier for her because she was going through stressful situations, it's probably easy to share that load with Joni. That can definitely have ramifications on your future relationships.
Yeah. And the first guy I dated, I didn't date anybody until I was 19. So that all happened. I mean, it was like, it overlapped, but it kind of started around like 14. It just naturally went into my first romantic relationship, and I didn't have that many, and they were all, they lasted too long because I was fixing them. I didn't think I could like let go because I needed to be there or that they would fall apart, which is just not true. Like, they would have been fine, but I didn't see it that way.
And sometimes the person does fall apart, but it's not your responsibility.
Yeah, that's true. You know? And I didn't see it. It just felt like my responsibility mm-hmm. with a few guys I dated, and including my ex-husband.
So how did you come upon, because did you realize you were codependent because you read that book?
Yeah, good question. It was kind of an interesting sequence of events. There's the 12-step program that the church puts out.
Okay.
In the beginning, it talks about like various addictions, and one of them they specifically mention is codependency. And I'd heard that term before, and I was like, I don't really know what that word means. So I just started researching it briefly, and I came across a quote that I was like, oh, I think this is me. I think I have it. I reference it pretty often. I think this was just on a blog post, but I copy and pasted it and put it in my phone because I talk about it a lot. My simple definition of codependency is an insecurity where we are unhealthily hooked into other people in a way that makes us do and say things that aren't good for us or them. And this is the one that felt like this part was like piercing to me. It said some of the primary characteristics of codependency include caretaking, controlling, low self-worth, repression and denial of feelings, anxiety and obsession with getting things right, poor communication, anger, lack of trust of others, and bad boundaries. I was like, all of those.
Dang it.
Yeah, it's one of those like, check, check, dang it. I don't want to finish this list, yeah. But like, yeah, okay.
And like, I couldn't even be, with like low self-worth, I was like, that's like probably true, but like, I mean, not that low. And then like, as time moved on, I was like, oh yeah, it was pretty low. Like my whole self-worth was wrapped up into other people, specifically my spouse. So I realized it and I shared that with Nate, and pretty quickly I had to like really face it because we were not doing well. And so like, that's something I'm super grateful for, is that he was like, oh, that really sucks. Yeah, you have been manipulative and controlling, and that hurts. And it made me take like a real look at myself and have to change it. And it's something I, like I said, I still struggle with. Like, that's like my go-to way to love people. And so I have to learn how to take a step back and be like, that's just not my responsibility. That person, I can like love and support them, but I can't control them and manipulate them into what I think that they should be doing with their life.
Mm-hmm. So can you give us a few examples of what your codependency looked like in your marriage?
Probably. A big one was school. Instead of letting Nate kind of choose his own path and be the person he wants to be, which may have been like not going to school ever, I like really pushed it. And when he would like not do well on a test, like it affected our relationship very negatively.
Well, if self-worth is one of those, it's almost like if you fail a test personally,
then I
you
failed.
Yeah. And so if your self-worth is wrapped up in them, then that would be easy for your self-worth to be like, oh, we sucked at this test, you know?
Yeah, or when you see like, someone like not act them best, their best selves, which is going to always happen when you're with someone long enough, you're going to see them be a human. I took it as if I had done it. And like, I was embarrassed, not just for like him, but for me, because I was wrapped up with this person. Hmm. Which again, like, he's allowed to be a human. That was all on me, feeling like his choices were my choices. Mm-hmm. Does that give you a good example?
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
The thing that I thought was really interesting, so Codependency No More is the book that I read right after I kind of realized I had this issue. And literally like everything in the book, I was like, yep, this book is just all about me. But it also talks about how we can be codependent like with children. And I thought that was interesting. And I noticed that pattern often in people that I talk to. So you can be codependent with your parents, you can be codependent with friends, you can be codependent with your spouse, with your children. And it's not something you like realize obviously, because you think you are just loving them
and you're just helping them
and
saving them from failure and hurt.
Exactly.
But it doesn't do them any favors or you.
Yeah, no one's happy about it, because you're not in charge of, you're not like taking charge of your own emotions. You're letting your emotions be like, there's a scripture that says like, it talks about like the ways of the world, like you're tossed to and fro by like the world's changing views. But I feel like that is a lot of how you feel, like, emotionally. Like, you're just like, you have emotional whiplash all the time because you aren't choosing, or you don't feel like you're choosing your emotions. Mm-hmm. You're just following in the footsteps of someone else. And that feeling out of control makes you be more controlling. And it's like this vicious cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you start to control wherever you can. And so, like, the parent example would be, oh, I see my child struggling. I'm taking on all of their emotions, and then I'm going to control everything in their life so I don't have to feel that feeling again. And the child feels suffocated because they're being put into this box that they really shouldn't be in. It is not good for them. But as a parent, you can finally, like, breathe, like, okay, I fixed everything. Like, if I saw my child being left out of a playgroup, I would then talk to all of the moms to make sure that my child was not left out. But then what if they still left her out? Then I would then go talk to all the kids, and then my child is embarrassed that I talked to all the kids about being her friend, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you're really not thinking about what your child needs and what they could learn and grow from that experience. You're just thinking about, I have anxiety about what's happening over there and I need to make it go away. What can I do to make it go away? And it comes from a very loving place where you think you're helping that person. Like, oh, my child won't be lonely. It'll be great. But in the long run, my child lost out on an opportunity to learn how to make friends or to stand up for herself. Or
right. Teaching them
to how be alone.
To, yeah, to be alone or to talk to people and communicate, because you're going to have to learn to communicate.
That's a very selfish thing, like, as you're explaining it, in that you are trying to calm down your own anxiety. Like, I just didn't want to feel that way. And so the way I would not feel that way is to control and manipulate. It is just so interesting because I would say, like, I feel like dating is just like helping people. Like, I've never dated someone who I was like, didn't feel like I needed to help.
Like, you would say to your friends, like, dating is like helping people.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I recognize that this was, that it was strange, because I'd watch other relationships and I'm like, they just seem like they're friends, but like, I don't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't attracted to people
who were on that level with me. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt like I was needed and like belonged with someone who I could like help lift, but they didn't want that and they didn't need it. I made that up.
Well, and it's hard being with someone that's like, you're not good enough. They're like, come here, come here, come here. They can like feel it.
Oh, when yeah.
Like, fix this, mm-hmm. fix this. And then I'll love you. But then I'll find this and then I'll love you. You know, like,
yeah, like it's like, I don't know. I was going to say like cat and mouse, but I don't know if that's the right.
Like, yeah, but like you're chasing something that is never going to be caught.
You know? No one will ever be good enough for me.
Yeah.
And Nate felt that. I remember my little brother saying like, Joni, like, it's okay to just like let Nate be Nate. My brother Carson and I were driving. I had a few friends that pointed it out to me before I finally realized like, oh, this is an actual issue. I felt like it was a problem, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. So I didn't know how to address it because I'm like, I feel like I'm just being nice, but I'm also not being nice. Like, my intention is good, but my execution is poor and comes out in a way that that I don't want to be. But yeah, there's definitely a pattern there, and multiple people saw it, and a few were brave enough to say it to me. But it took me like reading it and then identifying like, oh, this is what I'm doing to the people that I care about.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like I was the other way. Where it sounds like you were like, oh, I need to help fix you. And I didn't feel like I had enough knowledge or experience to be like, oh, let me help you. It was like, how can you help me? Because I didn't have self-worth. So it was almost like, okay, Justin, like my hobbies are your hobbies now. And, you know, like I just, and then if he was good or happy, I was good and happy. Now looking back, I'm like, I think I was definitely.
It's the opposite, right? So we talked about because, the codependent goes both ways. Yeah, so you can be dependent on other people or other people, like you're trying to fix them because if they're fixed, I'm happy. But then like with you, Amy, you're looking to him to fix all of your stuff.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. Whereas like Joni could have ended up in a relationship with someone who was more like Amy, which is funny because now you guys are together.
Minimally codependent.
You know, but it's like, she could have married someone who was eager to have someone who fixed all of their problems. And then you would have been exhausted at some point because you'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm done fixing all of your problems.
Yeah.
versus the people who you did date were like against you solving their problems. Mm-hmm. But you could have found that one person who was like, oh, finally, I don't have to do any thinking. Joni's going to do it all for me. It's amazing. And so it probably pushed you to figure things out because you did end up with someone who was pushing against it, and it became more of a toxic relationship rather than like a, we'll just both go on in our unhealthy codependence forever because one person is like, I'm happy to be submissive to this more dominant person. It's great, you know? Which I think a lot of the parent-child relationships end up that way, where the parent is codependent, fixing everything for the kid, and then the kid becomes an adult and is like off at college and is like, Mom, fix this for me, you know, because they don't want to stand on their own. They're like, please just keep fixing it.
And they never really learned how to.
Yeah, they don't have like the rule book of like, okay, here's what I do and here's that time that I failed at this, but then I learned. They just come to like paying your taxes and they're like, there's nothing on this page. My mom will do it for me, but a codependent mom will do it for them and be like, yeah, send me your stuff and I'll do your taxes for you. A typical parent-child relationship would be, I will show you how to do your taxes. And then that child starts to fill out that page. The next year, they might have a question. And then, you know, the year after that, they can do their taxes on their own. I always come up with weird examples. I don't know why. But Elliot just did our taxes yesterday. So.
Well, and it's even interesting because I lived on my own from 18 to 24. I got married at 24 and I was independent, did my own thing. Because I think I've talked about it before, but as soon as we got married, it was like, okay, fix this. Like, I don't know how to do things.
Yeah, you had your person to be codependent
with. Yeah, and he's like, dude, you know how to do that. Like, you've done this before. You can figure it out. But I think I was just wanting him to fix stuff.
I was very hard to live with. I think people like to point to one person in a relationship, like whoever they know, they want to point to the other person and say like, that person is the reason why it like sucks so bad. But I take full ownership that I was not a fun person to be married to. And I had to unfortunately learn through a marriage that was never going to really work out how to not do that in a relationship. And that's why I tell people I'm so grateful for my marriage, because I think it was the fastest way for me to learn this lesson. Because I had been in a couple relationships that the same thing happened, but we were never forced to be together long enough where I had to face my issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could have just broken up and gone on and found someone else.
Yeah, I literally found the same kind of person with a different face. Over and over and over again. And now I have the self-confidence that I'm like, I don't need to fix anybody. Like, I want someone who's like, feels whole in themselves and I feel whole in me. And we're both not like perfect, but like, you own your stuff, I own mine. We're here to support each other, not to fix one another. And I have a much healthier view of what a relationship is supposed to be instead of, I don't know how long I would have gone on thinking that and kept running into the same issue. And it's also confusing because we're taught to help people, especially within a Christian setting.
You should give everything of yourself to other people.
Exactly. And that's actually not the case. Like, you have to have boundaries. And my dad is, I think he talks about in his episode, like, I think like God is very boundaried. He's good at loving someone, but not taking on their issues and not, because if he was, he would be a freaking roller coaster. Like, we are all over the place emotionally
all the time.
And so he has to learn how to love someone, but not necessarily from a distance, but in like a healthy, boundaried way.
Yeah. And there's examples of that healthy, boundaried love everywhere if you just look for it. But you can also find really quick examples of people who are unboundaried. And it's like, whoo. Sometimes it can look very idyllic, like, oh, that mom is doing everything for her kids. That wife is doing everything for her spouse. That employee, we can always depend on her to get everything done, you know? It can seem very idyllic, but those people are suffering inside.
Yep.
And then there's the people where you watch them and they're frantic in their life and you're just like, put something down. You don't have to do it all. They don't always listen. They rarely listen. So it's good that you actually saw your codependence and took it in. I find that that is rare. When I tell someone, like, let's look at codependence, They're like, nope, let's not.
I credit my former spouse in that he's like, you can't treat me like that anymore. And so I really had to take a look at, like, you know, sometimes where you're like, oh yeah, this is an issue in my life. And you're like, okay, I'm going to think about that later. I don't know. Like, sometimes I yell when I get upset. I'm not dealing with it constantly, so I don't have to actually take care of it. It became something that was like, oh, the only way this marriage would ever function is if I stepped away, learn how to not be so intertwined in his life. Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful for that, for his reaction that was very painful, but it forced me to learn.
I know you, on your quote, Joni, that it listed some of the ways you're codependent, but how do you help people realize that they're codependent? I know you said a lot of people don't admit that.
Don't like to.
But then what are the first initial steps to help overcome that?
In therapy, if I was your therapist and I was trying to help you see it, we call it like the stroke and then kick. I think that's like just a saying in general in life. Like
hi, I stroke you're doing good at this.
Yeah, but I stroke your ego and then yeah. I give you a swift kick in the pants. And then I go back to stroking your ego. So it'd be like, that was so helpful the way that you helped him study for that test. Wow, that was really great. Do you think that maybe it's not your responsibility to help your husband study for a test though? And maybe that should be on him? But we can readdress this next week. You know, just think about it though. And then they come back and they're like, it's not a problem. I'm like, okay, cool.
But it is. You know?
And the thing is with codependence, it's similar to like a personality disorder in the way that it weaves into every aspect of your life. And so true codependence will be in all of those aspects of your life. Your social, your work, your home will take over. It's like a weed. It will grow everywhere. And then you have to root it out. And sometimes it's easy to root it out in this relationship or just at work, but it's way too hard to look at in my marriage, you know? And so it gets really hard to get people to do that vulnerable work because it is painful to admit that you are treating people poorly or that you are unable to emotionally regulate on your own. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to see those realities, but I know so many people in like codependence recovery, because it is a form of addiction, I think, in a lot of ways. It's being addicted to other people's emotions. And so to be in like recovery, I know a lot of people who are in recovery and who are doing amazing things and really practicing their boundaries. But like I had someone that I worked with who was in codependence recovery, and she had, so Melody Beattie is the author of Codependent No More. And she has another book that has daily affirmations about codependence. And she still reads one every day to remind herself to set good boundaries and to be separate from the people that she works with and for, because she's a therapist. And so it's important to realize that and to change, but it's very hard doing the work. Getting that out of every aspect of your life is like excruciating, I would imagine. I mean, you can tell us how it was for you.
Yeah, I just didn't even, it was like hitting a reset button and learning how to have relationships again. Because I realized it wasn't necessarily just my romantic relationships, it's just where it was most apparent. Mm-hmm.
You could probably say toxic. That's where it was most toxic.
Yeah.
It might have been helping you more in other places.
Yeah, I think people like having the friend that will,
yeah, be there all the time.
Mm-hmm. And do or take on those emotions with them. I'm not saying I'm a perfect friend by any means. There's things that I would do that were very helpful, or that I'll fix that problem for you. I mean, I still do this within my family. My little sister was here and I'm like, oh, you haven't had an eye checkup and you want to get new glasses? Let's just go do that today. I think that there is room to be kind and helpful, but I have to check in with myself now a lot more. Is this something I want to do? Is this something that they're able to do for themselves? Am I being kind or am I being codependent? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's so tricky, is that it sometimes you do feel like you're just being kind. Whenever I'm resentful at all, then I'm like, oh, this is not me being kind. This is me doing something I actually don't want to be doing, but I feel like they can't do for themselves. Mm-hmm. My motivation is pretty important for me to be in tune with. And it's hard to look at yourself and be like, wow, I like kind of am terrible at having relationships. Because
which
it's
is
like
so primary to
life. Yeah, it's the thing I care about the most. Mm-hmm. And I think that's common for a lot of codependents, is you care most about your relationships, but you're actually kind of bad at them and you want to maintain them, but then you're going to have to learn how to maintain them with boundaries, and not everyone's going to respond well to that. So it was Brené Brown talks about a street fight of vulnerability, like it's a street fight with my codependency. And any dating relationship, I'm very wary of it, because I think it'll be something that's my go-to. It'll be my default for a long time until I have enough practice out of it. And I got essentially like a year to practice not being codependent with my husband. Mm-hmm. I remember my thought from earlier, but did you want to say something?
No, go for it.
I think the one reason why people shy away from their codependency is that it's often linked to alcoholism or drug addiction. And that's not necessarily true. You don't have to be dating an addict of some sort or be with an addict to be codependent. You can be codependent with your children, or you can mm-hmm. be codependent with, you know, with anybody in your life. So I think that's just an important thing to keep in mind. I feel like, oh, some of this sounds familiar. The first time I ever brought it up with one of my good friends, Tara, who's been on here, I was like, I think I'm codependent. She's like, this is kind of what I know about the word. And it was more addiction based. Yeah, there's a lot more to it. And it's basically like just really terrible self-worth. And I need someone else to like live my life for me, kind of. And that was part of my recovery too. And why like hiking is so important to me is because it was like me taking charge and doing something for me that had nothing to do with anybody else. And I wasn't fixing anybody by doing it. It was like all about me and something I needed. I commonly, when I recognize codependence in other people, I see that they don't have a lot of hobbies. They're just doing things for other people all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that was totally me. That's crazy. Okay, so once you realized you were codependent, what did that look like? Or like what kind of boundaries did you set for yourself? Or how did you...
Yeah, like where did you start? Yeah.
Where did I start?
Yeah,
yeah, like what was like the first boundary that you set? Not like literally, because I'm sure you don't remember. Like,
yeah.
On a Tuesday at 4 o'clock, I was like, okay.
Not doing your homework. Well,
yeah, exactly. But what were kind of the baby steps to come out of it?
That's a good question, and not one I think I probably won't answer this well, but I'll just talk about what comes to mind. Whenever Nate would make a choice that I didn't think was the right one, I would get really emotional, whether that meant crying or I was angry. And I'd hold it against him. And so I had to start realizing when I felt myself doing that, I had to remind myself like, okay, Nate is his own person. I'm my own person. He's allowed to make this choice. It might hurt me or it might be hard for me, but it really doesn't have anything to do with me. This is him living out his own life. In the church, we talk a lot about cleaving to our spouse, becoming one. But I had to remember that we are two separate humans that are choosing to do life nearby each other. It was simple decisions, how he spent his money, how he ate. Like, I mean, literally things that I have no business caring about were things that would affect my emotions. So I had to just always, I was always taking a step back from my emotions and being like, why do I care about this? Is this my decision? Nope, usually not. So I don't have to care about this. I felt like before it was my responsibility to care.
Because that's how you would show him that you loved him.
Exactly.
That's what your system was telling you.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like a love thing, but it didn't feel very loving in doing it. And it was certainly not received in a loving way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thinking about how you were saying, Jessica, that many people don't want to realize that they are codependent. And I wonder if it's like, I'm trying to fix you so you become who I want you to be. So if they realize I'm not going to be codependent, they might not actually like that person the way they are.
Yeah, that could be very scary. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's a whole new thing too, where it's like, okay, you do make these choices and I actually don't like them and it's not my job to fix them, but I might be setting this boundary to leave you because...
Yeah. And
I don't like the way you are, actually.
Yeah. And it became less emotional, probably partially because I was on Zoloft, which if you are codependent, Zoloft's a really good one to like not feel so reactive all the time.
Yeah. Kind of slow down that emotional roller coaster.
Oh, yeah. It was the best.
Oh, yeah. Didn't like feel a thing.
What I sound like when I talk about like my kidney stone meds, like, oh my gosh, I would be a drug addict if I could get my hands on Dilaudid every day. But Zoloft, man.
I get it
for
every
codependent,
day.
It is like the dream. Mm-hmm. That whole process actually became easier when I was on Zoloft. But I wasn't like, I was still sad. I was sad that our marriage was ending because, you know, you have to kind of grieve like the life that you imagined together. But I was able to be a lot more distant from that emotionally because I'm like, this is just what I need. And like, I'm not what you need and you're not what I need. And so we need to move on.
Yeah. That's interesting you say Zoloft did that because it was when I got on Zoloft that I started changing. That I wasn't so like sensitive and emotional. So I wonder if
that's what I'm saying.
Helped like, me like actually process it without like, yes, this sucks and I'm not going to break down and cry because I'm so hurt that I've been hurting you. But it's just, yes, that sucks. Here's how we're going to do it.
You're so much more logical. I'm so much more logical on it.
Yeah.
I think it just gives you the ability to manage your emotions instead of reacting.
Yes.
You know. So like then choosing your reaction.
Getting off of Zoloft and being like this, like knowing what I can be like, is it easier than, not easier, like obviously you'll still have to figure out how to regulate those emotions.
Well, that's what I'm going through right now.
I was like, I think we have an expert on this. How is your experience like?
It's been hard. I was telling, I was hiking with a friend today. Okay, so back up. Logan is Amy's kid and they went hiking last year and he got really upset at the mountain for like mountains. Tripping him up.
He trips on everything.
Yeah. Okay. So him and I think are like soul sisters. No, soul he's a boy. Sister. I don't know. We're
soul people.
We're kinfolk. I don't know.
What, kindred spirit.
Kindred spirit. That's the one I'm looking for. We're kinfolk.
Aw, cute.
But somebody.
Today I was like so irritated at the snow that I kept slipping down it. And I was like, this mountain, like I felt like Logan. Oh. And so like these, and I told Kelsey, I'm like, it is exhausting to be this emotional again. It is exhausting to like have these really high highs and low lows. And I don't know if right now, if it's worth it. I very well might get back on it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give myself a couple months, see how I feel. I kind of found out I was codependent in, I think it was March of 2018. I didn't get on Zoloft.
So 2 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, March. Yeah.
Which is great.
Totally. I was like,
okay, so 2 years ago. 2 years.
And I got on Zoloft in January of 2019. So almost 10 months later. So I had 10 months to start learning how to do this before I got help with medication. I got better at it. It just became so much easier with Zoloft because I didn't have to like consciously choose every time to take a step away from my emotions. It just kind of became like what I did. It's certainly something you can do without medication. I did it. It's just, it was so much easier. I feel like I'm more tired. I'm so much more emotional all the time that I have to process my emotions. It's tiring and it's heavy and I'm definitely not always the nicest person because I don't always catch myself before the reaction happens. The other thing that I found that was interesting, it was when we listened back to the podcast we just did 2 weeks ago, I was still very much like in the throes of being really mad and it just felt more extreme. And I was kind of getting used to regulating myself again. And as I was listening back, I was like, oh, I was much angrier in my head than came out. Mm. I didn't always sound as horrible as I felt like I was in my head. So that was just like a good lesson for me. I don't think everyone gets that opportunity to hear yourself talk when you're in such an emotional state later on and when you're not in it.
Well, maybe I'm a bad friend, but you were like, because I was like, oh, I love that episode. And you're like, I was really mad and all this. And I was like, I mean, I knew you were opinionated. And it just seemed like you were talking like with passion, not anger.
Well, I don't think that's a bad friend. I think because when I was listening to it, I was like, oh, I don't actually sound that angry. Yeah. I just felt so angry. So I think even though I feel a lot more emotional, that's not necessarily conveyed. A lot of it is because I actually am able to regulate better.
Mm. Yeah. If you're not spewing it out immediately, that's good regulation. Because you're feeling it and then tempering it and then bringing it to the world.
So I was like pretty proud of myself when I like heard that. I was like, oh, this, I'm actually doing better at this than I think I am. Hmm. However, it's still hard.
You sound like someone who is in recovery. Where it's like, oh my gosh, my emotions are huge. This is like, I have to deal with every single one of them. And it really is like overwhelming when you realize how many big emotions you have regularly that you can't then discharge by forcing Nate to do what you want him to do and by manipulating him. You know, that was the way that you used to discharge those big emotions.
Right.
And now that you're not using your relationships to do that, it is hard work to have to just sit in them before you throw them out into the world.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hard.
And then sometimes it gets easier, right?
For sure. Yeah, it does.
Because I'm like, one day I want to get off.
I don't know if it feels so much easier to ever feel difficult emotions, but I think it just through the course of our life, as long as we're working on it, it gets much easier to respond to emotions. And to remember, this doesn't last forever, which is a huge thing to learn.
Well, that was something I remember on Armchair Expert, Dax Shepard talks about. Like, whenever I'm feeling a negative emotion, I'm, like, convinced that I'm going to feel this way forever. But when I feel a positive emotion, I don't expect that to last forever.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, yeah, this will pass for sure. But when you're, like, pissed, you're like, this is not going away. Mm-hmm. It is hard to remember that in the moment. I definitely feel like there are coping mechanisms in place. Sometimes it's just walking away. Sometimes it's getting outside. Sometimes it's talking it out with someone else. Distracting myself. I have multiple coping mechanisms that I have learned over the last couple of years that I can use to not discharge it on a relationship or any relationship. I'm the first one to say, like, failed at it. Like, I've still done it, but it's so much better than it was.
Well, that's just life. Hopefully we learn and grow and improve ourselves.
Hopefully.
You just seem to be hard on yourself right now about it, but...
Yeah, I think no one can know what's going on in me except for me, and it feels so much harder than it's felt for the last year. And I was like, oof. Someone the other day described... He said he prescribes people Zoloft, and he's like, yeah, it's like the zombie drug. And I'm like, well, I was a happy zombie.
Yeah.
I know, I'm like, wait, I can function.
I didn't feel everything so intensely, but I was happy most of the time. I'd say like 9 times out of 10, I was happy versus now it's more of like a 6 or 7. And that's hard. That's a big jump for me.
Yeah. And I do think you have to really weigh within yourself what is more important to you, because there's nothing wrong with being on medication.
Yeah.
But then it might be more important for you to learn to handle those huge emotions on your own. You can go either way. And I think that that's another conversation that you have to have with yourself and with your doctor and with your therapist, because it'll be different for everyone, whether you should be on Zoloft indefinitely versus like, okay, it's time to get off and face those things.
Yeah.
And it can be like, am I using Zoloft to avoid hard things, or am I using it to cope with hard things in an appropriate way? There's two very different ways of using it.
Absolutely. I also think there's like a time and times that are easier to come off of it than others. Like right now, it's a relatively easy time for me. During my marriage, if I had already been on it, that would not have been a time to come off of it.
Mm-mm.
So there's that to be aware of as well. And just, I saw my dad yesterday. I'm like, I feel like I'm like cheating life because it's so much easier when I'm on this medication. He's like, I don't think that's cheating. And like, if you're happier, that's great. I get it. I feel like I sound like a druggie. Oh, it's so much easier to live my life this way. But
yeah, but there is something to be said of perhaps there's a reason. Maybe your brain chemistry really is different. And so it is truly easier when you're on Zoloft. And so that's where you have to dig deep. And I think just listen to yourself and decide what is best for you, because no one can decide that for you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Do codependent people often feel resentment when they're trying to fix someone and they don't listen or do what you're wanting them to do?
I guess I can't speak for other people, but I can speak for myself. When you want to control someone and you think you know what's best for them, when they don't do those things that you... I wouldn't even say, like, I think I know what's best. Like, I know what's best. At least that's how I felt. And when they don't do it, it's really frustrating. You're like, well, if you just would do these things, then your life would be better. I don't understand why you're not listening to me.
Mm-hmm.
But with the resentment thing, I think what I was more referring to is being charitable versus being codependent, I guess. If I am truly being charitable, then I don't feel resentment. Like if someone asks me to bring brownies to something, if I say yes and I'm dreading bringing those brownies for like the whole month that I have to worry about it, then like then I wasn't doing something charitable. I was doing something for some other reason. Versus if I say yes and I'm not resenting it. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Or you can have also your codependent and you bring the brownies, but people don't thank you for it. And then you have resentment. So like there's a lot of different ways the resentment manifests, but I do think that codependence and resentment come together quickly because you want that person to be like, thank you for fixing my life. This is amazing. And when they don't thank you, you have resentment. Or if they don't do what you want, you have resentment.
Yeah.
Or if they don't guess your Christmas present exactly correctly, you have resentment, you know? And so there are a lot of like different ways, but I do think it comes into play a lot, but it is a good way to identify what the root of your behavior is, really, if it is like, I'm doing this to help you, or I'm doing this to help you so that I can alleviate my emotions and feel happy.
Yeah.
And if I don't, then I'm going to have a little bit of resentment towards you that it didn't work.
And I think also the emotion I identify a lot with is feeling out of control. If I'm feeling out of control, then I then want to control something. And it was often something that wasn't me. Now, the other thing I talk to people about a lot is I was able to just deflect my own issues for so long that I didn't actually look at myself and realize what's going on here. It's really easy to get caught up in everyone else's problems because there's plenty of them for your whole life. I'm just so grateful I realized that I have this tendency or this problem before I had children, because I would have completely tried to control them, and in an effort to feel in control in my life and in control of my own emotions. That's something also I can notice in myself, that when that's happening, I can take a step back. I'm like, what am I feeling? Because I can't actually control that person. That's a different person. That's not me. So what can I do within myself right now to take care of what I'm feeling? And then I can move away from that codependent action that I was leaning towards.
When Justin and I first got married, I was like, okay, well, let's combine Facebook accounts, because I wanted so this cute control.
I just hate
shut up
people combined Facebook
accounts. I was like so insecure myself.
Yeah, no, it makes sense.
I know. And I was like so worried. Oh, you always get those inappropriate messages and all these different things that I wanted to control, mm-hmm. because I wanted to know we were good. And then even if someone would message and it was like kind of inappropriate, or not inappropriate, but I'd be like, well, what's this about? And he's like, oh my hell. Or like the rated R movie thing that we talk about. I was like, no, we're not watching rated R, right? We like not doing that. Like,
pretty sure we decided together. Yes. That's not part of our life. Yeah. So, but it is that kind of thing where it's so important to control and to be like, do it.
Well, and it causes shame and distrust, because even though that's like a stupid thing to lie about, well, then why are you lying? Well, because you're acting like a bitch.
Because you're gonna go crazy.
Why does it matter if I make this choice? Yeah.
If I lie or if I tell you the truth, I'm still in deep shit. Yeah. So exactly. What do you want from me, woman?
Well, he should have been perfect.
Because that
if you just knew what you were supposed to do, which I do, you will be okay.
And this is why I tell people, I love hate when people ask me, were there signs before you got married? I'm like, of course there were.
Yeah.
I just didn't have the eyes to see them. I knew there was issues. I didn't feel good about a lot of the parts of our relationship, and nor did he. That like it came up over the 2 years we were together before we got married. But we both weren't mature enough to see what our actual issues were. I don't think that's necessarily true for every relationship. Yes, those issues were definitely present before. I was just...
You didn't know you were codependent. I just didn't know what that meant. Yeah.
I was clueless.
Yeah.
And you can not feel right all day long, but at least the way I function, I need to like know what's going on to be able to address the issue. Just like I lived alongside anxiety for years of my life, but I didn't know what it was. I just thought I sucked at being a human and being social. I had no idea that there was something else going on inside my head that I could work on. And I didn't know how to work on it until I had a name. Mm-hmm. We've kind of hit on parents and moms.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it so much. And I wonder if there's things that you see, Jessica, that could be indicators for parents. Not just moms, I guess. Dads, too. But I see it more with moms, maybe, because I interact with women more.
Are you talking about me?
No. I'm really not.
But we are.
We'll call her
I've Annie. Seen you parent, and you are not a codependent parent. Because your kids definitely get angry, okay. And you're fine with it. Oh. Which is great. That's good. Okay, you know what I mean? Like, good, yeah. When they're angry, you help them deal with the anger instead of trying to fix whatever made them angry.
You're embarrassing me. Do this.
I definitely am like a, I'm not a codependent parent, but Enna is so small. I'm like, I can fix everything for you still. So I will. It's amazing. You'll never be sad. I'll
move this table so you don't hit your head on it yeah. for the fifth time.
It's so great. I do think that codependence is thought of as a female thing. That doesn't mean that it is, but there are a lot of mothers who are codependent because it hurts to watch your child suffer. And there's a lot of dads who do that too. But for some reason, the people I saw in therapy who were codependent were all female. But I think what you want to look for, and really if you're a parent and you want to know, you have to assess those feelings. So why am I doing what I'm doing for my child? Is it to change my emotional state or is it to help them learn how to change theirs? Hmm. Is really probably a simple way to look at it. Am I trying to control their life so that they don't have to deal with hard things? Or am I okay supporting them while they go through hard things? Which is great. But I think you should also look at just general, what are you doing for the people around you? If you are cooking every meal and cleaning up every meal and cleaning your house and helping your children with your homework, their homework, and bathing everyone and putting them all to bed, you are probably codependent and you are looking for someone to thank you for that so that you can feel good about what you did. And if no one thanks you, then you'll have resentment towards them, but at least you can be like, well, I did everything and I was a perfect wife and mother today and that's wonderful. But you really have to dig deep and be like, okay, but why? What is this doing for me? Because having a perfectly clean kitchen is wonderful and great if you enjoy and feel more relaxed in a perfectly clean kitchen. If you feel like people will be disappointed with you if you don't have a perfectly clean kitchen, that can be codependence. You know, so it's really digging into the root of your behaviors and looking at why, rather than just being like, well, if you have a clean kitchen, then you're codependent. Obviously, that's not true. But if you have a clean kitchen, that can be part of your codependence. I also, as a therapist, there's a feeling that you get. And it is like what you described. Like when you feel out of control, you look for something to control. You can feel that in people.
A visceral feeling.
Yeah. And so when you're around someone who is codependent, you probably feel a little bit suffocated. Mm-hmm. Is usually the feeling that comes. So in my podcast, Thoughts on Thoughts, we have an episode on codependence. In there, I say that codependence is the anxious attachment to an insane degree. So if you take anxious attachment and just ramp it up into all aspects of life and all of your relationships, generally, most of your relationships, I should say, that is codependence. And so it's that just idea of like, oh my gosh, I am very anxious and always seeking validation from other people. And you can feel that on the other side of it. Some people are attracted to that. Like Amy might have been like, oh, I love that someone's going to take care of me. And then Joni is attracted to that because she's like, I can fix people and they'll let me. It's wonderful. If you are a generally stable, healthy, boundaried adult, you're going to feel a little bit suffocated by people who are really intense. And you're going to look at that mother and be like, you don't have to do everything for your kids, you know? And she's going to be like, but I'm still going to.
Like, and I don't think they, like, often, I can say this about myself, like, you don't see that that's what you're doing. Like, you just have no clue.
Because you see it coming from such a nice place, or you're just gut reacting to things, mm-hmm. you know? So if you did look at it, you'd be like, but I cleaned the kitchen and I put the kids down and I made dinner. I'm such a great person. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. It's coming from a good place, but it's not ending in good feelings for everyone.
Yeah. I also see like guilt tripping associated with codependency a lot. And at least that was something I do. And I see in people around me that they're like, yeah, like I did all this for you. Mm-hmm. Like you should be grateful. And it's like, well, then why did you do it? Because like, if you wanted to do it, then you would have done it regardless of if I was grateful or not.
Back to the dishes. It used to be a thing. You need to do it and I need to do it. And I wanted it to be fair, but I don't even know. And then he's like, well, I don't care if the dishes are like clean and the counters are all wiped all the time. And so I had to finally realize, like, oh, I want to do that because I want to, not because I want appreciation and be like, look what I did. But it's like,
That's actually important to you, yes, to have a clean
I've
home.
I actually function better and I can't really do much until that's clean. That's when I can finally relax. And so instead of being like, can you clean that? Or else I'll get mad at you or guilt trip you into it. And it's not really a choice for you. I just had to finally realize, nope, I'll just take like 5 extra minutes and do this real fast. Mm-hmm. And
or you ask.
Yes.
Right. So a healthy relationship would be, I can't do it right now, but I would feel better if it was done. I will ask my husband and he will be like, oh, I didn't even notice because it's not important to me, but I will do it because mm-hmm. I love you.
Yeah.
And then there's no resentment. Yeah, they talk a lot in marriage therapy about, like, why are you asking and what are you trying to control? Are you looking for ways to be like, well, you didn't do it? Because that's why we speak what we need and that's why we communicate, is to avoid having to deal with long-term resentment. You shifted your behavior and so you're in a happier place, but every once in a while, you're like, oh, hey, Justin, will you do the dishes?
I like that you say, like, in a healthy relationship, though, and that was something that I had to learn how to do. I would try to be better about asking for things if I wanted it for like a more honest, pure motivation. I'm not saying that right, but like I tried to be more intentional about what I was feeling when I was asking for something. Mm-hmm. And if I was asking for it because I wanted to manipulate him into liking me more, or I wanted to manipulate him into doing something I wanted to do, if it felt manipulative at all, that it wasn't, it was my codependency working. But if it was being like honest, and when I was being honest and I could truly say I was, then even though he thought maybe that's where I was coming from, because that was what I used to do all the time, we could talk through it to a point where, oh, like you're just being a normal human right now. That's nice. That's not always what happened, but it definitely became, it changed the way we would interact because I sometimes wasn't being crazy.
Yeah. Well, even for me, I wanted him to be happy. So it'd almost be like, if we both had potential plans on a day, I would then be like, will you do it? But then I'd almost resent him because mm-hmm. I didn't get to go do my thing. And so now I've had to learn, like, no, this is actually really important to me. And we can talk about it instead of me just like, you do that, so you're happy. And then I'm happy, but I'm actually not. So
mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. So I think this is a good thing to bring up, like what a boundary really is. Hmm. Because we teach boundaries. And I think the tagline is a boundary is when you say no, right? Like you finally learn how to say no and you don't do everything for other people, and you know, but really a boundary is weighing my needs and your needs and choosing which one to go with. And sometimes other people's needs are greater than your own, and so you can sacrifice a little bit to meet their needs. But there are many times when you're sacrificing to meet their needs and that's not healthy for you. And so boundaries are really about balance and saying, what do they need and what do I need? I need to dig deep and see like what is the correct answer here. But boundaries are not always, I need to take care of myself, right? Because when we first learned boundaries, it would be Amy being like, okay, I have many times let Justin do his thing at my expense. I'm taking it back and I'm doing my stuff. You know?
You can never do anything.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And people are like, and they'll be like, well, I set a boundary. It was great. Yeah. But it is that idea of like, okay, Justin, your needs are not as great as mine because I'm being boundaried. It becomes that, okay, let's talk about it. And maybe Justin says, well, I'm seeing an old friend from college that I haven't seen in a while. And Amy's like, well, I was going to go down the street and talk to Joni. So you think, well, okay, I can talk to Joni tomorrow.
Or she can come to our
house. Yeah, exactly. So I'm being flexible. Justin can have his. And that's sometimes it is about sacrificing what you want for the other person. And so people who are coming out of codependence, who have done so much for other people, have this instinct to take back everything.
All about
self-care. And I think that that's a great first step, is to take back everything and be like, okay, it's all about me for a little while. But then you have to realize, okay, now how do I balance my needs and other people's needs in a healthy way?
So it's like a pendulum. You're like, yeah, I was way over here.
I know.
Now I'm way over here.
Over here
and now let me stay in the middle.
Yeah, I'm in the middle and it's a lot healthier.
As you were talking, I was thinking before you can even have those conversations, whether they're like on one side of the pendulum or they're in the middle, you have to learn how to just be honest with what you actually need and learn how to communicate that mm-hmm. to somebody else. And that, I think, is sometimes the hardest thing, because it's easy to like give someone a billion other reasons about why you want something. Financially, for me, that was a pain point. And I would say, I don't want to do this because it would cost this much money. I don't want you to buy this shirt because that's $25 we should do something else with. But the real issue for me was I feel not part of these decisions. I have a fear of not having money. So there's a lot more going on there. And I had to learn how to, like you said, dig a little bit deeper into why I was acting the way I was, why something felt so emotional in the first place. And that honesty comes just with practice, starting to realize what my patterns are and, yeah, why things are important to me.
Yeah, and I think if you can't identify what the deep thing is, that's where a therapist will tell you what the deep thing is. Hmm. But yeah, do you maybe feel insecure about this in some way? You know, yeah, I think the therapist is helpful in helping you. I mean, a lot of times the therapist will just know what the deeper root is, which is just like one of those things because you see a million people and then you're like, oh, I get it. But it's helpful to maybe talk through it sometimes. So if you can't do what Joni's doing, people can do it on their own. Some people who are coming out of codependence have no idea what their true needs are. It's just like such a fog because they're like, I don't know why it matters that he buys this shirt, but it is a big reaction in me, you know? So sometimes you need someone to help you dig through that.
And if for some reason like a therapist seems scary, and that's a far off step for you, something else that helped me was telling my friend, it's okay, you can be honest with me. Because I think our friends and family members who we're close to see these patterns, but they don't always feel like it's their place to say them. I had a few close people within my circle that called me out on stuff consistently and never in a mean way. It wasn't all me and my own like self-awareness. I certainly needed other people. And then I also had like a therapist on top of that. And I have a relationship with God. And I feel like that was like a huge help in my life mm-hmm. is to be able to navigate my emotional history and figure out where these things were coming from.
Well, and even like reading books and listening to podcasts really helped me a ton. I guess mm-hmm. I've read a lot of books. Jessica's amazing Thoughts on Thoughts podcast, where it just talks about these little clips that you can go and listen. Like, am I codependent? What is an attachment style? What is anxiety? Anxiety in kids. So many nuggets of goodness that
there's information everywhere, but you have to be pretty humble and learn how to be self-aware to actually apply them to mm-hmm. yourself. And I'm saying that like there's plenty of things that I hear now that I know I'm not applying. I'm like, yeah, that's great. That is great advice.
I will do that later.
I'm going to do that later. Yeah.
When I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That'll be in my mind. And it is like when you said at the beginning, you had friends who had started to mention things. And then when you read it, it was like, okay, now I'm ready to start to deal with this. And I think that there are times and seasons for healing. And that's just part of it. I think I talked about this on the last time I was on The Onion. There's layers mm-hmm. to our onion, and sometimes we're not ready to look at that layer, and that's okay. It's okay if you're codependent and you hear this and you think it's not time. That sounds way too hard, but there will come a day when you cannot ignore it and the healing starts.
And healing doesn't feel like healing. It feels like your world's falling apart.
It's like a war zone.
Yeah, it's actually sucks a lot. I definitely can say on the other, I don't want to say I'm on the other side of it, because I'm like, recovery is certainly what I'll be in, I think, for the rest of my life. I think that the roots of codependency are pretty deep, that I will always battle with that. I can say like from this side of it, I'm so much happier because I am able to have healthy relationships across the board, and when they're unhealthy, I'm able to work through that. It's so much, so much better. But it was hard. It cost my marriage. Mm-hmm. So
it's and a huge cost. Yeah,
yeah, but it was completely worth it. And I have said before, I wish that my learning didn't have to hurt so many people, Nate and his whole family. But that's part of being human, is that we affect each other positively and negatively, and we learn together, and that sometimes means that we're causing each other pain and our stories cross for better or for worse. And I hate that that was the way I had to learn it, but I just don't know. I think that's the way it would have happened eventually.
Yep. You talked about how as you were dating before you got married, that you're like, I don't know why, but I just feel like I should marry him, or I feel like it'll work out, even though things didn't feel completely yes, 100%. So you talked about how you have had this interesting relationship with God, how you used to blame him because you would like feel the spirit and need to do something, and you would do it but be resentful because you weren't confident in that choice. What was that like? Was that a codependent relationship with God?
Well, I mean, that probably, I can talk about it and then Jessica can say what it is, because I never thought of it that way, but probably, maybe, I don't know. So Nate and I were engaged for 19 months.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, it was a really long time. That was a long time of people saying, why are you getting married? And the truthful answer was, I don't know. I felt like it was the right thing to do. I felt like it'll all turn out okay. That was kind of like the prompting. I just struggled with the decision the whole time. I never felt like completely at ease about it. So when pretty quickly into our marriage, it got unhealthy, I was so mad at God. I'm like, you said that this was going to be okay, and this does not feel okay. This is like the unhappiest I've ever been. I'm crying every day. I mean, it was true hell. And took me a long time. And I mean, honestly, I'm still working on learning how to trust God and trust promptings, because that was such a big one that didn't really pan out.
I mean, we panned out. We've got a good ward.
Yeah, like a lot of good things came from it. But it's like the right. Like what I thought was going to come from it didn't come from it at all.
Yeah,
I would blame God saying, you made me choose this, but that actually was never true. And like, that's what I've had to come to terms with, is anything that I feel like I should do because of a God thing, I don't have to do. But at the time, it was like a compulsion, especially coming off of a mission where you're like, follow the spirit all the time. Mm-hmm. Don't let prompting pass you by. I really did feel I had to marry Nate, and I did not feel like I had a choice in it. What I've had to learn is that God is there to guide, but he's not there to tell me what to do. It has certainly shifted my practice and my worship, because I don't do things that I am told to do just because I'm told to do them. I have to want to do it. And then it's meaningful. I don't know if it's a codependent relationship with God, or maybe a misunderstanding of what God and the Spirit was. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think people do have codependent relationships with God. I don't think God has codependent relationships back. You can kind of wonder where it goes wrong, but it does go wrong at some point. I think that idea of God told me to do it and so I did it and now I'm not accountable, that's would be the codependent piece of it, is that I don't have to be responsible because God told me to.
It was really like his choice. Yep. It wasn't my choice.
Yeah. Instead of realizing I am also choosing this and choosing to trust that God knows best for me, that's a very different thing than I'm doing this because God told me to. Or the thing that I saw a lot in therapy, because I did practice in Utah and a lot of people were members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Science.
It just got so long that I
got that out. Yeah.
You turned Southern.
Yeah, which I can't do normally. So it's a miracle. They would do things like adopt a child because they felt like God told them to. And then when everything was awful, they would blame the child. Because if God told me to do this and it's not working out, it has to be your fault. And those relationships were terrible, terrible, terrible. I think it's the same as any relationship, really. So when you think about a relationship, something that I heard a lot before I got married was, you give 100 and he gives 100. That is not a real thing. It should be, sometimes you give 70 and he gives 30, you know, and it always changes. But you should always be giving yourself as an individual, right? Like, you are a person and that's where it should be coming from. And so in your relationship with God, it should be Jessica as a person is interacting with God instead of God is acting upon me as a person. And so in codependence, it often gets mushed together and you're not an individual person anymore.
Right. Like, I'm a vessel. I need to help everyone I possibly can. So I'm going to adopt all these people. But then it's like,
but then I have so much resentment.
I don't have the resources to do that, or I didn't want to do that work. Mm-hmm. Is that also too, where
they have
just
so
like,
many kids? A lot of foster families have so many kids, and then they have resentment towards the kids for not healing. But when you have, you know, six traumatized children, you don't have time.
They're very needy. You know? They need to help process.
And you could have one and not get them to heal because it's up to them. But the anger would be outwards instead of taking responsibility for choices. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It gets kind of like cloudy and whatnot. But mm-hmm. I do believe that people can have codependent relationships with God when they believe that God is controlling everything in their life. That is a codependent relationship with God, because we do have agency and we make choices and people around us make choices. To have an overall belief that God will help us work things out is great and wonderful, but to have that belief that God is controlling everything in our life and everything that happens was the way it was supposed to happen. Well, yes, that's true, but you're also taking all of your responsibility and just like throwing it away. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, God will do everything for me, instead of realizing that you need to act and you need to be responsible for your actions and your choices and the way you treat other people and the way other people treat you and the way you allow them to treat you, and on and on and on it goes, you know. And I think it's okay to have God say, you should marry this person, and you say, but all the signs are pointing to it's not a good relationship. And then God would have found another way for you to learn that you were codependent. And you wouldn't have had to do it that way, but I think it did work out for you. But to then take away that responsibility and be like, God did this to me, that's just not true.
And that is how I perceived it for a while. I mean, it was kind of like that. I mean, not as dramatic, but Joseph Smith's quote in the Doctrine and Covenants, like, where's the pavilion that
hideth your face,
like, where are you, like, where the hell did you go? Because that's really how it felt. I thought this is what you wanted, and I was so excited to finally get married, because I was like, oh, this is like what you essentially asked me to do. And it was a couple weeks in where Nate was like, did we make a mistake? And I was like, oh, I hope not. I mean, we did, but we weren't willing to face that for a couple of years. I felt alone, but also I mean, I could have learned that lesson not even getting married. I felt like things would be okay, but maybe this is just what I needed, was a year with Nate to learn these lessons. Like, so there's so many other ways it could have gone. It just went the way it went, not because of God, but because of the choices I made and the choices Nate made and how those choices affected one another.
And the place that you were in, right? Like, none of it would have happened if you hadn't been in a codependent place. And, you know, and so to be like, God did this to me, is just incorrect, because it's all of my life circumstances up to this point led me here. And really, because of your codependence, you were going to marry Nate.
Right. Whether it was him or someone else.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's why, again, like, I'm just grateful and I can't be mad about it. And I'm not even really embarrassed of it. Sometimes it sucks to be like, yeah, I'm 28 years old and I'm divorced, because of more the conversation and judgment that comes along with that at times. But for the most part, yeah, it's a part of my life that isn't a really pretty part to present to people, but I'm a much better person because of it. So I'll own it.
Yeah. Worth it in the end, for sure.
Definitely.
Because you chose to make it worth it, which is an important thing to realize.
Yeah. I feel like in religion, it's really easy to walk that line. Like, kids, I feel like we should have lots of kids.
That is one for sure.
Yeah, I used to be that way.
Where I'm like, if God tells you to have more kids, but you don't want to have more kids,
then
don't have more kids. Wait until you want to have more kids and then have them. And if you never want to, great. You don't hate that child.
And you're not going to hell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you've seen that specifically, therapy, people feel like
it's really sad.
It's
the hardest thing that I had to watch, was when I had a child once tell me that their mom blamed all of the chaos on them and said, like, my mom told me that everything was calm before I came here. And I argued with the child and I was like, that isn't true. And the child was like, are you telling me my mom's a liar? And I wanted to be like, yes, your mom is a liar. She's blaming the chaos in the home on you. That's just completely wrong and irresponsible, you know. But they felt like they should adopt this child, and so they did. And it just, it is heartbreaking to watch. You have to make choices because you want to make them. And if it truly is the right thing for you, you will feel good about it.
Yeah. But if you're feeling that resentment and like...
it's just not going to end well.
Or if you're seeing red flags, like there are things to be learned along the way to a choice. If you feel like you're going to have another, you need to have another kid, but maybe you also feel like you need to work on yourself first. Maybe that's actually what you needed, not the other kid or not the marriage or not the move. There's so many things in life that it's just maybe a prompting to get us on a path that we need to be on, but it's not, that's not the destination at all.
Yeah. So have you had a choice or like a prompting now that you have felt I should do this? And what have you done with that?
I think one good example of the fact that I applied to grad school, I still don't know if I'm going to go because I don't know if I'm in. It was last summer. I was in a young woman's class. I'm not younger than 18. I'm a later.
That's interesting.
And they talked about education and I was like, oh, crap. I feel like I should go to grad school. And I was like, I'm not ready to go to grad school. So I just, okay, that's a nice thought. I'm just going to put that over there. And then the more I thought about it, I think I kind of want to go and this is a good time for it. So I came to terms with it being my decision. But that process was like 5 or 6 months. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, okay, then I'm just going to apply because then I would have been resentful towards me and I wouldn't have been. I'm still scared because when I was in school last was when I was with Nate and I was an emotional wreck. And I didn't sleep very well. Like there was a lot of things going on with school that were not really school. And so going back to that is hard for me.
Sounds like it's almost triggering.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And then they tell me like, this is going to be a lot harder than your undergrad. I'm like, super.
That's what I want to hear. Thank you.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm in. So maybe the process, maybe that was to get me prepared to really think about it. And I don't know what that destination is. And the way I practice my faith now is if I feel like I need to do something, I will likely do it, but I'm not going to do it until I want to do it because otherwise I will fall back into that blaming God mindset and I'm not interested in doing that again.
Yeah. I think that there are a few times in our lives where we take that blind step of, I have no idea, but I'm going to do this. And that would have been like your marriage, you know, I'm just going to do this because I feel it's right, not for any other reason. But most of the time, things will feel good to us as an individual, as a person, that we're inspired by God. But God is bigger than all of us, and so who even knows?
You know? Well, and just feelings or emotions are so fluid.
Yes.
Even on my period, like that seems, him not doing the dishes that one time seems like the worst thing he could have ever done. But then wait a day or two, and okay, actually that was me being out of control, so... just like taking the time to mull it over to figure out, do I really want this? Like, you don't need to just be like, hey, I should walk out in front of that street. I feel really strongly about that. And then you walk out and get hit by a bus instead of like, okay, well, let me look at my surroundings and see if that's a good idea and how I would go about crossing the street in a safe way or in a way I feel comfortable doing.
I do think it's interesting how much we talk about feelings within the LDS faith. And I've had multiple positive experiences by following just thoughts that come into my mind. I definitely think there's space for that. That's sometimes what's tricky when I tell people, like, I'm not going to do something unless I want to do it. And even past me is like, sometimes you just do it and then it ends up being a great thing. Yeah, and I still sometimes don't really know how to talk about both, but I just think there's room for both.
Mm-hmm. It's part of having spiritual maturity and growing in your relationship towards God. Whether that's God talking to you or whether that's your codependence coming out, or there really is a lot to be said about just like learning and growing as a person. And you're more likely to hear the spirit and be like, okay, yes, that was a good thought. I should act on that versus like, this thought makes no sense and makes me feel kind of bad. The idea of marrying Nate kind of makes me feel bad, but I'm going to let that supersede and do this, which I wouldn't do again if I were you. You know what I mean? But yeah. Like, it probably was where your life was supposed to go, because guess what? That's where it did go.
Yeah.
And that, I always say that, like, God will tell you things, but life will be what it is because you will make the choices that you make. And so there's no way to know what was on the other side. Or could you have learned that you were codependent while you were engaged? Yes. But did that happen? No. And so then next came marriage.
Or you could have just lived life codependent and not done anything about it.
Yeah. Or you, a lot of people are old when they discover their codependence. Hmm. And their children are raised and they're still tired and they're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Especially from 20 years ago, because people didn't talk about therapy back then. So, and codependent, like, even Codependent No More is not like a crazy old book.
Yeah.
I don't know how old it is.
I want to say 85, yeah, 86.
I was going to say it's probably only like 20, 30 years.
Well, and then it coming out and then it becoming like a popular,
like a widespread belief. Right. Yeah. I think like the word codependent was coined September 1st, 1986. So yeah, so that's a 33 very,
years old.
That's a new concept, really.
Hmm.
Which a lot of therapeutic concepts are very new concepts. So
yeah, so you think of people in their 60s, 30, however many years ago, they were where I was, and they didn't have the resources.
I don't.
Yeah. You feel like a psycho person. You're like, I know I'm acting crazy, but I literally don't know how to act another way because this feels like the way you love someone.
Well, it's innate. Like, that's just
innate.
It's just in you, you know? That's just how you are.
Yeah.
You think you're so funny.
I am that funny. Was. Thank you.
So this question is for Jessica. So what do you do if you realize your spouse is codependent or your friend is codependent? And how do you set those boundaries?
Or talk to them about it?
Mm-hmm.
Also, P.S. in your question, I just think lots of times people are codependent together.
Yes, like, often.
Justin wasn't codependent with me, though. He was like...
And that's why it was frustrating for you, was because he wouldn't be. Because every time...
just validate me?
Yeah, exactly. Because every time you came to him, he'd be like, you know how I feel or whatever. And you'd be like, son of a...
But I'm so glad he did that, because then it was like... Oh, Justin, I finally get it. I'm so sorry. He's like, I'm so glad you get it.
But often it's a codependence that goes both ways.
But then you're also saying if like in therapy, I guess, if you're telling someone they are codependent, they're not willing to hear it. So if it's coming from someone who they are acting on.
Yeah. So the best way is to do the stroke and kick with a mixture of boundaries in there. Okay, let me think of a good example. Probably every mother who is codependent is stressed to the max at Christmas to have a perfect Christmas for her children and her spouse, probably, but they're probably secondary. Let's say the spouse sees this and wants it to end.
Like, I want to actually enjoy this season.
Yes, because you are a stress case and it's hard to live with you for the month of December. So they might stroke and kick, right? Honey, you have made Christmas such a spectacular part of our family, and I love the traditions that you have created. But this year, we do our kick, which would be in this case a boundary, right? But this year, I would ask that you, maybe she's overspending, stick to a budget of $100 per child because X, Y, and Z. Which would be best stated as, because I feel stressed that come January, we've blown our budget and January is a difficult month for us. That person then has the choice of how to respond. And if they push back against that boundary, which most of the time they will, that's a great opportunity to say, I wonder why this is so hard for you to accept. I've been noticing this pattern in our relationship, and I'm wondering if maybe there's a little bit of codependence going on. Because when I tried to set that boundary, which I do feel like is reasonable, you've really freaked out, whether they were yelling, crying, or just secretly not following the boundary and spending way more money or, you know, whatever they were doing. You thank them for everything that the codependence has brought to the relationship, and then you say, but let's put these boundaries in place, and then you see how they respond. And if the person who's codependent responds really well and says, okay, yeah, I can follow that boundary, then you just continue to set boundaries and shift their behavior that way. But if they buck up against that boundary, I think that's when you have to be more clear with what you're trying to do and be like, okay, I feel like you're codependent. Why don't you go research it and find out? But a lot of people just don't want to accept it until they're ready to accept it.
I think that's the hard thing in a marriage relationship, is that you're committed to that person, at least at present. And it's pretty jarring in that relationship to then start setting boundaries when there were none before.
Yeah.
It's rough. And I'm so glad I'm not in that position anymore. To speak to people who aren't in relationships, it's nice to then set boundaries along the way and see how they respond. And if they're not responding well, then that's probably not a good relationship for you.
Yeah.
But it's so much harder when it's like a relationship that's already, there's a lot of history there. You have ways of acting around each other and to each other. And it's gonna really shake things up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Sue Johnson does marriage therapy, and she is a big ballroom dancer, which I've met her before, and she's like this tiny little fiery woman, and all of her analogies are ballroom dancing analogies.
Gotcha.
The idea is that every marriage, every relationship is a dance, and if one partner changes the steps, the other partner has to change their steps. Because if I'm waltzing and all of a sudden I go into a cha-cha, that person who is still waltzing is not going to be dancing with me anymore. So they have to shift no matter what. Whether they shift to then cha-cha with me or they choose to leave the dance floor is up to them. If you are with someone who is codependent and they don't want to acknowledge it, but you're doing a good job of practicing boundaries, you're going to shift that relationship even if they're not acknowledging the root of their behavior.
Likewise, if you are the codependent and you see that you need to start setting boundaries, that person is probably not going to respond great to that either, because they're used to, they're just used to what you've had. Mm-hmm. And I think of specifically lots of codependents are in abusive relationships. That's going to be hard for them to, for you standing up for yourself.
Yeah,
they're not going to respond well to that. And that might mean that you're going to start walking off that dance floor because it's just not going to work anymore. And that's a super hard reality to live through and so much easier for me to say.
I would always tell my teenage clients who are obsessed with love and like my young adult clients, I really like the idea behind he's just not that into you. And I like to apply it to all relationships.
Which is on Netflix right now, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Which also I don't agree with the movie, because they set out, they're like, here's what shows that he's not that into you. And then they undo all the rules at the end. So I'm like, ugh, whatever. You missed the point of the book. But the idea is, if he's not into you, he will show you that he's not into you, right? And we don't need to make excuses. But there is someone who will be into you. And I think that that's the crux of the book, is that you are a wonderful, worthy human. And as long as you are working on being the best version of yourself, you're not a crappy human, then there is someone out there who will love you for where you are and who you are. And sometimes the cost of being in a healthy relationship is the end of an unhealthy relationship. And it is hard to swallow that cost. It's hard to swallow that he just isn't into you. But that opens you up to the freedom of having a healthy relationship in the future, right? The cost of Joni marrying someone because of her codependence was that marriage ended. And that's a huge cost. Because when you marry someone, you do it because you think it's going to last and it's going to be great. And when it isn't, it's incredibly painful. But now she is clean slate, can have a healthier relationship as long as she is now with her eyes open, being smarter about who she dates and who she chooses to marry. Go off of that idea of like, if you're not a crappy human, then you are a whole human who is worthy of love and belonging. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And I think that we often have this thought in the back of our mind, I'll be a whole human when X, Y, and Z. And a lot of those thoughts come from society and people around us. So I will be a whole human when I'm married, or I'll be a whole human when I have children. I hear that a lot. Parenthood is the best and hardest thing that you will do in this life. But I buck up against that, because that is the idea that there is something external to us that is the best and hardest in our life. And that's not true because it is internal to us. Does that make sense, like verbally?
No.
Okay, I'll redo it. I had to do this in therapy all the time. I'd be like, do those words make sense to you? And they'd be like, no. I'd be like, okay, I'll say it again. Right?
So, I wanted to, but it doesn't.
Yeah, I know, which is great. It's good to know. Yeah, so the idea is that when parenthood is the best and hardest thing.
Or marriage.
Or marriage, yes. Or, you know, school or whatever. The idea is that it's something separate from you. And so once I have my child, then I'm going to be able to experience the best and hardest of life. But before I have my child, I just can't, right? Because I'm a single person, and so I am less than and unable to experience the full breadth of life. And I just don't hold with that. And so I think it is up to us to stand where we are in the situation that we are, whether it's I am divorced, whether it is I am the mother of three children, or it's me who's like, okay, I have one child, but I worked really hard to get her here. And so I remember what it was like to not have her and how I felt so different than other people, but I didn't let that ruin my life. It's just having that wherewithal to say, my life is worthy and just as worthy as every other human's, no matter where I am. And I think that that goes for teenagers and for children and all these people that we look down on as like, you are less than me. And I do say this often to people who are kind of like in that 18 to 23 age. I'm like, okay, you're not like a real human yet. But they are, and their relationships and their experiences are completely valid and important as they are, no matter what state they're in. And I think we have to remember that, like, no matter where we are ourselves, we are important, and we have value intrinsically. It does not matter if we have a spouse, or especially if we have children. I think people do feel like having children is the pinnacle of life, and that's just not true. The pinnacle of life is being born, I think, because then it's just like all life from there, you know, like it just keeps going. The fact that you're here on this earth, you're doing great and important things.
Well, I think a big thing in church, you hear a lot, because I think a lot of older single adults have a hard time in church because, and then I found my spouse and then I had a kid and that's when I was happy. Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is that
be happy along the way.
Yes,
absolutely. And work for it.
Yeah.
And that you're a whole person regardless of your experience or lack of experience, I guess.
Well, yeah. And so many people struggle with infertility, and so that's hard. That's something out of their control. So they're like, I'm actually trying to do this, but then to find that happiness regardless of if they have children or not, and mm-hmm. not to like be codependent and be like, my happiness is based on my kids' choices.
Yes. And that's really what it is about, is we have this idea of when something happens, I'll be happy, and that is a very codependent thought. My happiness is based on that thing outside of me, instead of trying to find your happiness inside of you. And there are life circumstances that do make you happy, and that's fine. Like I say all the time, yes, I love having Enna. She is wonderful and so cute. But I was just as happy and full of a person before she came. I didn't need her to be like, oh, now I have worth in this world because I gave birth to this human. That just isn't a true thought. But we have worth in all of the times and seasons of our lives. And if we never have children, cool. We never have children. That's fine. Right. If we choose to not have children, cool. That's fine. There's just so many different ways to live life. And especially in the culture of the church, we have this idea that you get married, you have children, and then you're happy. And that just is so far from the truth.
And it may actually be the opposite if you are not happy with where you're at.
Absolutely.
Now. That's totally me, because it was like, I didn't know what was happening in my head or what was going on. But I was like, oh, I'm not full until I marry, or I'm not fulfilled until I marry. And then I got married. And then it was like, well, I need kids. And now that I'm like healthier, I went through this like resentment process. I wish I could have like lived life without the kids as now, instead of feeling I need to be able to have kids in order to be fulfilled. But now I'm fulfilled, but almost feel held back. So it's like this balance of trying to figure out, okay, what do I want and what's possible and what do I really need? Is this me just going the complete opposite way of being like, I'm resentful toward you and I want to be able to do whatever I want?
That makes sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it is, yeah, realizing that you didn't appreciate the time and season that you were in when you were in it. Mm-hmm. And now you've been forced into a new season of life and you're like, oh, but I want to shift things, and now you can't. Mm-hmm. And so that's where now the work is to enjoy the time and season that you are in and to realize that you do have to grieve the loss of what might have been. And that's okay to have to grieve what you want. Just like it's okay for me to have been sad that I was infertile, and it's okay to be sad that you're single, but don't let that stop you or feel like you have less worth and to live every day.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, I shouldn't feel this because I love my kids. But to be like, you I wasn't healthy back then. Yeah, you can hold feelings
together.
Yeah.
I always like to say and. I think we're going to do a whole podcast on the power of the word and. Mm. I am happy to be single and I am sad to be single. Mm. I'm happy to be a mom and I am sad to be a mom. And,
yeah.
And that's okay, whatever you want to
I
hold.
Love my kids and I want something more
to be away from them.
Or, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I want to be doing my podcast because it makes me feel fulfilled. You can hold things together, which is beautiful, I think, in life.
Well, and regardless of kids or not, or husband or not, life is going to be hard.
No matter what. It does not matter what stage of life you're in.
Great.
Yeah.
Hard and great.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that that's where we have to watch our language, because we often just get into rote language. No, but parenting is the best and hardest thing you'll ever do. You just can't say that absolutely. Mm-hmm. It just isn't true. I mentioned this, like for Joni, her marriage ending and coming out of her codependence could be the hardest thing she ever does in this life. Who knows? Then she's going to get to parenthood and be like, well, this has to be the hardest thing I do now because everyone told me. Like, you just don't know what's going to be the hardest thing in your life because you haven't lived all of life. But it just is very invalidating to other people to say, what I have is the pinnacle of life. Mm-hmm. It's the highest emotions and the lowest emotions you can have. And it's just like, no, being alive is the highest of emotions and the lowest of emotions.
Yeah. Life is just hard.
That's just how it is. Yeah. Every stage you will have that happen every single time. It's just that by the time you have kids, you can't go back to not having kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, even just high school or junior high, hearing that. Yeah. It's like, oh, if only you knew. But for them, it is so hard. And it actually is very
Oh,
and it's
hard for them.
It's like, frustrating for me to hear people to be like, oh, you don't even know. Like, you don't even have to pay bills yet. Yes. And I'm like, yeah, middle school kicked my butt. Yeah. It was super hard.
I don't have friends. I don't know what's going on in my
brain. Was ugly. Yeah. Like,
I know.
Yeah. I did not look cute.
Every trauma phase. I don't know how to deal with. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, right? You're like, I'm just trying. I know. And then you just even think about, like, I was in school for how many hours a day? I could never do that now. Because there's just times and seasons, and every feeling that we have in the present is valid. Mm-hmm. But I think we do become dismissive of earlier feelings because it's so easy to be like, well, I got through it. So that was easy.
Yeah. Hindsight makes it seem you don't remember like the pain of being in it.
Yeah.
But you're right. The emotions of the young women that I work with and the emotions of that I'm dealing with and the emotions of people who are retired. It's just all different parts of life and different kinds of hard and different kinds of beautiful and great.
And it's okay to celebrate where you are. I do also think there's like a stigma against saying that you enjoy motherhood, and there's a stigma against saying you enjoy being single, because then people are going to be like, oh, so you don't want to get married? Just enjoy the phase of life that you're in. Let it be happy. Let it fulfill you. And if it isn't fulfilling you, then do the work so that you are in a happier place.
Yeah.
Take a look, a deep, hard look at where you're at, because everyone can find happiness. It just is a lot harder for some people who do have mental illness and whatnot. But people who are not experiencing mental illness, sometimes we just have to tweak some things and then we can find some real true joy no matter where you are.
I love this. This is a good chat.
Yeah.
But thanks to Jessica for helping us process all this.
Yeah. Hey.
That's been great, ladies.
something to listen to.
Thanks, Jessica, for coming on. We love you and miss you and your face.
From a distance. Yeah. Is anyone else loving all the memes out there? I think that's... I'm going to stop podcasting and try to be a memer. Because that's hilarious.
I encouraged her in her goal, and then she said, I would be terrible at that because I'm so bad at putting...
condensing like my words.
Yeah.
She's like, no, you're not. I was like, yes, I am.
I said, you no, you're that? Not.
You're like, no, you really should. I was like, I'd be horrible at that.
Well, I said you should try it and say you would be good at it.
You just wanted to laugh at me?
No, like if it's a goal of yours, you should go for it. But I'm not saying it will you'll pan succeed.
Not sure anyone will pass it forward.
Oh, man.
So,
yeah, if you want to share this with someone, that would be great. That you, well, it's kind of dicey sharing this particular episode with someone because it's like, hey, I think you're codependent. You need to listen to this. But I think it's good for everyone to listen to because there's certainly... we're all on the spectrum of codependency. So regardless of where you fall, it's helpful to learn boundaries.
Well, and even I, throughout the episode, I was like, oh, maybe I'm codependent just based on some of the qualities. But then after we had stopped recording, then I was talking to Jessica. I was like, so am I codependent? Because I don't know if I really am. She's like, I think you just have an anxious attachment style because it's just with Justin. And it's like listening to Joni. I'm like, oh, this seems like it's way more intertwined in your life than
just like one relationship.
Yeah.
It's like my relationship with God, my relationship with my former spouse, my relationship with my whole family. Yeah. You and I are different, but there are pieces of codependency that I think we can all like people qualities. Can work on. Yeah. There's qualities that people might have that you might have. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Only you know.
We can all improve basically.
Sure. So. For sure.
Sure. Sure. You can.
All right.
Over and out.
Yeah. Lots of love.